Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I'm your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Well, hello, Judy. Hello, viewers and listeners. Judy, tell folks the title.
Tantric Intimacy. It's not just about sex. An interview with Katrina Boss.
And we just finished that interview, and what a treat. What a treat it is.
She's delightful and had so many interesting things to say.
She did, and you know, it's when you talk about Tantra, everybody thinks, and at least in our culture, I think, people think sex. Mm-hmm. And we didn't exclude talking about sex from the conversation, but it really is not that. And I have to say, I have to put in a little plug, toward the end of our conversation, she pointed out that our 7 words, be kind, don't panic, and have faith, map very nicely onto the concepts of Tantra as she teaches it. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed her description of that. So, you know, stay tuned for that. It's there, again, fairly toward the end, I think, of our conversation.
Yeah.
So we will get to that in just a second. Let's briefly put in a word for some of our favorite offerings here.
Okay.
So what should we start with?
So we have Reigniting the Spark, as we like to call it here, the book that started it all, because our podcast grew out of this book.
Yep, that's right.
I should say the subtitle, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
Yep, and that's where you'll read about the 7 words, you'll read about the concepts of stability and intimacy, some of my favorite things that also came up in our conversation with Katrina. Mm-hmm. So you can check that out as well.
Yes.
And then a more recent book.
Right. It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy is Wrong.
And there you'll find not only the sort of the title, It's Not About Communication, which sort of, I hope to be a bit provocative. You'll say, wait a minute, isn't it supposed to be about that? Well, it turns out not. But also, I have in there a roadmap of my first sessions. That's one of the latter chapters in the book. And that, if you want to get a window into a lot of into how a lot of these ideas play out in practice, certainly in the practice of couples therapy, check that out. I really find that's an interesting one. The feedback I've gotten, a lot of people have found that an interesting chapter. Mm-hmm. And I also want to mention the book I'm working on. I've been asking y'all for your help with this. I am working on a book where the working title is Betrayal, Faith, and Forgiveness. And so I am collecting stories of betrayal, and I've received a number of really fascinating responses to this as I put out the word in these podcasts and in my newsletter. By the way, you can sign up for my newsletter too. If you look at go to ctn7.com, you can sign up for Dr. Chalmers' newsletter. And I've been collecting some really interesting stories of betrayal, painful and interesting, and I'm looking for more. So if you have situations of betrayal that you've been through or you know about or close to, I want to hear about it. You can drop me an email going to ctn7.com and send a message through there. You can let me know if you want to Zoom. I will Zoom with you and we can have a conversation, or we can just email back and forth, whatever works for you. Let's put in a word for our sponsor.
Yes, we have The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
And that is available anywhere books are sold. And we now are able to say who Laria resembles greatly. Which is to say, this is Laria.
Yes. Yes, and you can go to lariazilber.com. That's also where you can acquire the book or get more information about the book.
And you can see Judy dressed up as Laria, which is worth it for just for that.
Go on TikTok and see all my TikTok videos.
That's
Laria,
true too.
With the blue hair.
That's a lot of fun. Yes.
The blue hair to go with blue pant.
Right. So you got to check it out now, folks. Well, without further ado, let us turn to our interview, and we will see you on the other side.
Our guest today is Katrina Boss. Katrina is a prolific author and teacher of Tantra and grounded spirituality. She shares how we can apply tantric principles to every aspect of our lives. Katrina's books include What If You Could Skip the Cancer? Tantric Intimacy, Discover the Magic of True Connection. You Don't Have to Eat the Eyeballs, A Story of Travel, People-Pleasing, and True Self-Love. And her most recent book, Divine Union of the Masculine and Feminine, published in 2023. Katrina, welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well,
I always giggle about the eyeballs, so.
I do too.
I know, and I'm going to guess we're not going to talk a lot about that book, although I'm going to deviate now that I've said that. I'm going to deviate
Now
from
we
our
have to
usual
find out
procedure.
because we
Now I
haven't
got to
read
ask.
that one.
Yeah, we didn't read that one. What do you mean by that title? I'm curious.
So that's actually a book called it's all about people pleasing and self-love. And because I am a dyed-in-the-wool people pleaser, I think I come from generations of people pleasers, and so it's quite a thing to unpack. And ironically, even within the context of couples, people pleasing is a huge problem, right? Because it actually creates a lot of resentment, a lot of feeling unseen by our partner because we're trying so hard, but we're not being honest. And so we actually almost create a monster that we try to do everything right. And anyway, but the eyeballs question all began because in 2018, I gave everything away and I was traveling. My kids had even grown. I was single. I was free and I was working online so I could do it anywhere. And I ended up living with a family down in Guadeloupe. And they took me out for dinner one night. And of course, people pleasing is one thing in family. It's another thing when you're living with other people's other families. Like you really want to be kind, you want to be easy to get along with. And they'd taken me out for dinner for this very classic meal. And I had this fish, and it was cut into three parts, kind of stacked with this sauce on it. And so I kind of like ate the middle and I ate the tail. And then there was this head like sitting there, just like looking at me. And I just didn't know what to do. So I stopped eating it. And the women said to me, "Well, why aren't you eating the head?" And I don't even know what to say. I'm like, and there's language barriers too, right? And I'm like, but it's just brains. Like, I don't want to eat it. And I'm not an adventurous eater either. Like, I am the most boring eater in the whole world. And she says, "Well, you have to at least eat the eyeballs." And she was so mad, right? And I was like, and in my head, like, I swear, like the speed in my brain at that point was like at a million miles an hour. And I'm like, I can't eat. And then I'm like, you can do it. You've done harder things. Come on, you can do it. And eventually my mantra became, you've eaten wieners, Katrina. Gotta be, it can't be worse than that. And so I took the eyeball and I stabbed it, which is already disgusting because it was a big thing. And I'm like, I stabbed it. And I'm like, and I put it in my mouth. And it's so big, I can't even just swallow it. So I had to chew it. And so, of course, my mind is just going at a million miles an hour. And I'm like, and then I went to chew it, and there was something hard inside of it. And that was it. I spit it out, and everyone's laughing, and I'm like losing my mind. So later, I call a friend, right? And I'm like, I don't believe what happened. It was so horrible, you know? But my friend wasn't a people pleaser. And she said to me, "Well, why did you say yes?" And I had no idea that I could have said no. Like it's almost like the training's so deep, we don't even choose it. And so that became this interesting journey, of course, of self-connection and love and all this kind of thing. And all of a sudden, I started realizing, wow, like how often am I eating an eyeball? And I never, ever thought I
Blew
could have
your
said no.
It's getting grossed out listening to it.
I know, it's disgusting. So that's that book, and it's a and of course I was traveling at the time, and it was very interesting to see how different cultures lived and how I really saw my own identity or lack of identity in a lot of cultures, like say Malta or Ireland or places that had been really in conquered many, 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 many times to the point that you almost forget who you are. And I really identified a lot with that. And so the book is a lot about those journeys. And then the journey of eventually finding myself, like for the first time, like in my, 50s, to actually go, wow, I do matter. And it actually is extremely important in relationships that we actually.
We'll come around to that. Let me go back to our usual opening question, which you're touching on some, but I want to sort of back up and ask it from the start, which is tell us something about how you got into the work you do. Tell us something about your journey, and you're already telling us some, but please tell us that origin story however you like.
What's funny, so I grew up in Toronto and I went to University of Waterloo. I have a degree in math and I actually started out as a computer programmer. And then I fell in love with a dairy farmer and I moved to the middle of nowhere, which is how I ended up where I am now, which changed everything. It kind of like threw me right out of my world, right? Like going from kind of this very clear mathematical corporate world into literally a very, very religious community, in many ways set back hundreds of years before, like from the modern world. It's a very different time. And in 1999, I got sick. I had breast lumps growing in my body, and my mom had just died of breast cancer, and her mom had died of breast cancer, and it was all that. And so for me, this was a huge turning point. My children were very young. They were like 2 and 4 years old. And this was my first great crisis where and of course, a teacher appeared. A man appeared in my life to help me kind of unpack what was really killing all the women in my family, like beyond just genetics, whatever we call that. And that is actually this the story of that is the is my book, What If You Could Skip the Cancer? Because what Jim did, this teacher, he helped me unpack all the ways that I had actually disappeared out of my life, because I had such a deep belief that my only role in life was to serve others, whether it was my husband, my children, my in-laws, the community, the church, the school, whatever. And I actually disappeared in many ways. But really, that journey was the journey from my head to listening within, to my intuition, to divine guidance, to whatever, and to stop believing that my brain had the answers. And I ended up having a miraculous healing. The lumps came right out the side of my breast, like after a few months, didn't just happen overnight. And that was a massive turning point for me. And then people started coming to me for counseling. They were like, well, I want to learn how to do this. And I realized I didn't have the answer. I didn't have an equation for everybody to get out of that. And I realized that the only thing I can help share is how to hear our intuition so that each one of us can find our unique path to happiness, to health, to whatever our journey is. And that's why I wrote What If You Could Skip the Cancer? Because after a few years, I realized I was losing the story. Like I was simplifying the story to the point that I was missing important points. And so that's why that book was written. And then about 10 years later, I was married for 20 years. And for all intents and purposes, we had a wonderful marriage. He's a very good man. We farmed together. We supported each other. It was very lovely. But I knew there was more. Like I knew, like according to society, we had a great marriage. We had great sex. Everything was fine. But I was like, there's a deeper intimacy. There's even in sexual intimacy, there's more. We're just scratching the surface. And the word Tantra rose inside of me. And of course, this is pre-internet. I mean, the internet existed, but it wasn't the search engine it is now. And so I went to my local library and I asked the ladies, can you find me every book in Ontario on Tantra? So of course, they come back with this stack of books. And of course, this is still when you're stamping books, right? And they're looking at me, oh, like this at me.
Tell you, Katrina, I just read a novel. I'll make it short, but I just read a novel that was set in part in a bookshop. And one of the lines they use is somebody calls up one of the main characters of the novel and asks her, "Do you have tantric sex?" And her answer was, "That's none of your business." Anyway.
Well, and it was so interesting because a lot of these books were about rituals and kinky things under the moon and all that. But it was really interesting because there was a sense that I was actually looking for something I already knew. Right. And so I would look through the books and I'd be like, this, that, and that really became the beginning of something very interesting of actually seeking what I already knew about Tantra, about life, about how Tantra as a spiritual path actually fits into our whole life. Because what was interesting is my husband had no interest in it. He kind of was like, there's nothing wrong with our marriage and there's nothing wrong with our sex life. So that drove me into studying the spirituality of it, like how we actually had to shift ourselves to live tantrically. And of course, sex and intimacy might be part of that, just like you might apply it to golf, right? It's just part of life. And then eventually I began teaching. I had this revelation moment and all these wild things happened. And then I started teaching and then people started asking me, well, is there a book we should start with? And I said, no, because I couldn't quite articulate where it came from, which is then why I wrote Tantric Intimacy, because I needed to give people this book. And that's sort of where it all began. And then that was, well, that book came out in 2017. And so it's sort of just been expanding and expanding ever t until now, where I just wrote Divine Union of Masculine and Feminine, which is a huge passion for me, because to me, we actually do desire a different way to connect. And now we're ready. We're ready to actually have the kindness we need. We're ready to actually be able to be introspective enough to get rid of the things that are standing in the way of a relationship. And so it's very exciting for me about what's possible now between everybody, not just couples, but between parents and children, between families, between friends.
So how does tantric intimacy differ from regular intimacy?
So Tantra at its foundation is the merging of the divine and the physical, right? Very often we live predominantly in the physical world, money, career, fitness, chill, whatever, right? And maybe once in a while we burn incense, or maybe we go to church on Sundays, but they're very separate. Or we follow a spiritual path and money is evil and sex is evil and we don't have anything to do with that. But Tantra says, no, these are meant to all live together. So now, if you imagine taking that into intimacy, suddenly this isn't just sex. This isn't just, well, we haven't done it in a week or something, or it actually becomes this realization, first of all, that I really am an infinite being. Like I am so much more than this body. I'm so much more than the personality I'm living out. I really am more than that. And I am the personality. The beautiful thing about Tantra is it's like, this is the vehicle. This is the vehicle for bliss. So we don't discard this, but how do we sort of light it up in a different way? So now all of a sudden you have this beautiful person in front of you, and you also recognize that in them, that they're not there to fill your needs, or they're not there for you to perform for. They're not there for anything except that, wow, there's this beautiful being who also desires to be intimate with me. Well, then all of a sudden everything slows way down. You get rid of all the goals. You get rid of any kind of fears and preconceptions of what you might want to have happen. And then all of a sudden, even something as simple as touch becomes very profound. It's almost like the touch when we hold a newborn and you just so gently caress this miracle of life. And the child also just sort of tucks into you, and this merging happens. And so then all of a sudden, you imagine, like people talk about, all people have tantric sex for hours and hours. But of course you do. And you don't have to either. There's no rules. But of course you could. In the same way that you may just lay with your best friend and just be intimate, whether it's talking, crying, making love, sleeping, just being with another person, it changes everything because it's so just not about that procreative style of sex that on a very the, one of the challenges with this world is that because sex was demonized and separated from anything spiritual, we don't talk about it. And so as teenagers, and of course I'm talking pre-porn, like I'm talking more closer to our generation, today's a whole other world, but we weren't told anything, so we default to the primal desire to procreate, whether we want to have babies or not. And then what happens is, well, I'm attracted to you, so we rub up against each other, we have an orgasm, and maybe we get good at that. But that kind of becomes the limit of it because no one will talk about it. Whereas the tantric path is like, there's so much more, and you don't have to leave out intimacy. So then suddenly, ejaculation, orgasm, you start to realize, well, these are actually very small parts of what's possible. Whereas in regular sex, they're often the point. They're the finishing point. Like if I'm working with couples and I say, well, just maybe imagine making love without ejaculating. And it's like, well, then why are we doing it? It's like,
Yeah, it's
why?
fascinating how that very aspect, when people are having whatever difficulties they're having, I'm a couples therapist and people will ask about that. And it's often very much related to that notion of goal-directed, that in order to get past these sort of vicious cycles that can occur, you have to be able to not be so goal-directed, just relax and be able to play. You know, it's interesting when you talked about holding a newborn, that I, Judy knows, I melt with newborns, each of our grandchildren, And the thing about newborns is they are so utterly, completely present. They're just there. They just are what they are. And my sense of in reading your book, which I do recommend to folks, by the way, we did read your, that's the one we read, was the Tantric Intimacy.
Oh, wonderful.
And that phenomenon of being fully present is, I think, a way of describing, maybe for the more secularly oriented, that sense of touching the divine. It's when you're fully present in the universe, not differentiating yourself from everything else.
Well, and even the tantric view of that is interesting because then there's many schools of tantra, but one is called Kashmir Shaivism. And they, for example, they see the world as, imagine that each one of us are infinite divine beings. So this is the oneness, this is omnipotence, omniscience, this is the concept of that we are all one. But we want to have an earthly experience. So in many ways, we have to be given the, fetters. We have the fetters of living here, right? And one of those limitations is time. It's the very concept of time, the very idea that there is a past, present, and a future. This isn't real. And on many counts, inside our soul, we know that our soul doesn't live in such a time construct, but here we do. And it's a good thing because then we get to look forward to having dinner tomorrow with someone and we get to look past, you know what I mean? Time doesn't have to be a bad thing. But we can get lost in it. So, like even in sexual intimacy, we can be so focused on the next thing I'm going to do. And oh, I want to, and I know they like this. And but what if, and what if it doesn't work? And what if I come too soon? Or what if, and we get all caught up in this construct of past and future. And we get caught in the past, like, oh, but remember that last time and that didn't work. Remember that last partner? And then, oh, I don't want that to happen. These are illusions. These aren't even real. They're not even, we are actually torturing ourselves with fantasy. But whereas when we actually know in our hearts, and this is part of that tantric path, that when we deeply know in our hearts that we actually are timeless, we can ha consciously live in this time continuum. We can do that happily and enjoy it. But when we deeply know we are timeless, we on some level transcend it while we're in it. And that's being present. Like we've been taught this for centuries by the gurus, right? Be here now, you know, and that's exactly it. And it's so much easier said than done. And that's the
And we
journey
have
to
good
it.
reason, good evolutionary reason to unlearn a lot of that, and you sort of lose touch with it. It's interesting when you were describing the notion of fetters. It occurred to me we're Jewish, although we're neither one of us particularly into Kabbalah, but the notion of tzimtzum, you're familiar with that concept? It's God had to withdraw some of godness to let us exist. To give us room to be who we are, to give us room to make choices. That the tzimtzum is the Kabbalistic concept that says God withdraws some of God's infinitude to make room for human beings to make choices, good and bad. And
That's
without
so
that, we wouldn't
interesting.
really have any room to maneuver. So we're divine beings, and yet we're also connected to. We're also,
Part of
very
the
much part of the
universe.
universe. Yeah,
Yeah.
part of this actual physical world. The other thing that occurred to me, this is me nerding out again.
Okay.
I'm a recovering nerd, but I have frequent relapses. When you were talking about already knowing, and I can't remember the name of this sort of almost cultic figure from decades ago who was writing about mathematics, that when you do a mathematical proof, what you're really doing is demonstrating that you already knew it. That feeling you get, when you do a mathematical proof. I was an old math guy way back in the day. That feeling you get of almost like a Zen Satori, it's like, oh, there it is. It's because you, on some level, already knew that. That's what's convincing about a logical argument. And there's something about Tantra that I sense is sort of like that same kind of experience, except not so cerebral.
Totally. Well, it's like when you think of like Ramanujan, right? I don't know if Ramanujan is the one you're talking about, but he was the Indian man that they reference in Good Will Hunting. It's this,
Oh,
there's
okay.
a movie called The Man Who Knew Infinity.
Wow.
And he was very interesting because even as an unschooled boy in India, he would write out, he would pray to know who Vishnu, I'm not sure who he prayed to, but he prayed to someone, and these mathematical formula would come out. He had books filled with them, and of course he ended up at Oxford or Cambridge, I can't remember which one, and they of course wanted him to write out the proofs of it, and of course he's like, what are you talking about? Like, it's just true. And it became quite a difficulty. It's a beautiful movie too.
I'll have to check that out. Yeah, that's the people th if you can't prove it, how is it true? You know. So let's talk a little bit about the divine union of the masculine and feminine. And can you define masculine and feminine? I know it sounds easy, but it's not that easy, is it?
Well, it's so important because so the masculine and feminine, if you imagine again, we talk about this oneness. If we talk about from a spiritual perspective, understanding the world, we have this oneness, God, and then we live in duality. And which just basically means that you get to experience other, right? So we get to talk. So we are in duality. One person is talking, one person is listening. I can pick up this computer, I can talk, I can, you know, this is duality. Those two aspects of duality, we'll just give them names. Like, this is the masculine side and this is the feminine side. It's not necessarily gender, it's just two aspects of duality. We could call it anything we wanted. What defines them is the masculine aspect is the one that's always doing to the other. And the other one, theoretically, if they're connected, is receiving it. So, for example, talking and listening. The person speaking is in the masculine and the person listening is in the feminine. If I am giving someone a massage, the person giving, this is the masculine energy and the feminine is receiving it. It's the bowl being filled, right? Some of the dynamics could be the protector and the vulnerable. So, for example, as parents, the parents are always in the masculine. They are, regardless of gender, they are always the one caring for the vulnerable. They're always protecting those. They're always giving and receiving. They also, one of the beautiful dynamics is structure and chaos. The feminine within all of us is wild, and it's not wild like crazy. It's just simply natural. It's actually connected to our integral, inherent connection with nature. And this, of course, has all been taken away from this the patriarchy we've been living in. And again, not about men, but this strange idea that the masculine energy rules. There's a domination aspect of what the energy we've been living in. And so it's shown up in an oppression of the male against the female, but it's also shown up in the structure over chaos. It's thrown into our institutions where the teachers impress upon the students. Like, for example, the feminine in almost every single dynamic is considered empty. So, like a child is sort of tabula rasa. You know, they are a blank slate to be filled by the wisdom of the parents, by the wisdom of the teachers, as opposed to the feminine actually being this rich tapestry of potential and perhaps who knows, like what we're coming in with, right? So then instead, the role of the masculine is then to create a structure for that chaos to thrive, right? Or the masculine's role is to actually meet the need of the feminine. So if we want to give to a charity, or if we want to help out, the key is to give what someone needs, not impose what you want to give on someone, right? And so it actually shifts everything that you actually end up reading the feminine and meeting that need. And it is so interesting because it just turns everything on its end. And one of the big parts, of course, is this dynamic exists within us. Right, that we also need to be whole. We need to have this masculine feminine dynamic within us that when that is balanced and when there's a real dance, like it was really interesting because we've often thought of like yin and yang in terms of that, but that's often a very static relationship, light, dark, you know, hot, cold. It's kind of like that. But when I wrote my book, I asked, there was a woman who wanted to paint the cover, and I said, could you paint a yin yang symbol that was three-dimensional and moving, that it was always moving. Like, I'm not artistic at all, so this is like a miracle. Like, I am a mathematician. I order things and everything's symmetrical. And this is what she drew. She painted,
Oh, wow.
right?
Yeah.
And And that to me is what is possible, that it's always this beautiful moving and feedback, and then what's important is in the masculine and feminine that both are always empowered by all things. There is no one, there's no weak. The feminine isn't weak, the masculine, there's no battle, because this is, and like in the first part of my tantric intimacy book, I talked a lot about love and understanding the need for agape, the need for respect and kindness. And when you have respect and kindness with someone, you don't, you all you want is connection. And the masculine and feminine, when we redefine it outside of the stereotypes of big and strong and demure and, you know, whatever, and people pleasing, right? Then all of a sudden, two powerful beings can then polarize into the opposite and create this incredible magnetism. And as this magnetism grows and you dance together, all of a sudden that magnetism may become stronger and stronger. And what happens is you merge into one. Whether it's two friends sitting on a couch having a deep conversation, or someone grief while another person holds them, or whether it's two people making love, this is how you experience bliss, through the merging of two people.
I've mentioned this actually in my books, that the most intimate experiences I've had outside of sex have been playing music. When in playing music with people, it's very much like that sense of the merging, which involves very much being both masculine and feminine, receiving and also giving. I really relate to that.
Well, and it's how we all interact, like even like playing for a group, like even teaching, like if you teach live, or even if you counsel people, when the people listening or the people asking for help are actually open, they're actually asking. So their feminine polarity goes into this negative, it goes into this attractive negative polarity. And as the counselor, or as the teacher, or as the musician, it draws something right out of you into them. Like it's, this is the natural, this is what true gurus do. This is what they do, because the students are listening. Like the feminine is not.
When I've had a day where I'm working that way, which I don't always, but when I do, it energizes me as opposed to exhausts me. And when I have a day when I'm trying to be in the masculine role without reading the feminine, which is to say, trying to sell people a bill of goods that they may or may not want to buy, means I'm not listening, of course, then I'm exhausted. And so, it's really, I've often pointed this out to folks when I've done supervision, it's a protection against burnout to learn how to work in that way that is energizing, because you become, if you're working with an individual or working with a couple, you become a unit with them. There's a merging that happens there. And we are all thinking thoughts none of us would have thought without that level of intimacy. That's a distinction. I wanted to draw this too for our listeners who've heard me talk about this endlessly, as has Judy. I like to make a distinction that the two sets of skills that every couple needs, the two needs they're trying to fulfill, are stability and intimacy. And until I read your book, I had never thought of that in terms of masculine and feminine. But there's an element of that where, and of course, that's, I think it takes a lot of introduction, as you do very well in your book, to help get that away from people's immediate stereotypes. But that notion that stability is all about masculinity and intimacy is all about femininity, as I'm describing it, because stability is where you provide structure and rules and order and predictability. And intimacy is where none of that is true, and yet that's where there's this feeling of life and ecstasy are. And I hadn't related that to masculine and feminine sides before, but that makes a lot of sense.
Well, and even like when you think of the power of vulnerability, of that intimate, right? Because that's that exactly what you're saying, right? That vulnerable is the feminine within each of us. But again, it's been seen as negative. It's been seen as a weakness. And I remember reading the Book of Joy, the conversation between the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu. And Desmond Tutu at one point, sorry.
I say I never read it, but I read about it. So yeah, please tell
Yeah.
us.
Well, at one point, Desmond Tutu said, you know, if only humans knew how fragile we were, that we are all one phone call away from our entire lives changing.
Yeah.
When we imagine lying with your love, or sitting with a child, or sitting with a friend, and really connecting with the reality of the fragility of life, how present we would be, and how open we would be, and how all of our expectations would be gone. And that's, it's not a fearful place, it's a real place. And life becomes, and then when the deeper we can go into that vulnerability, the more powerful the magnetism is between us. That's, and on a deep level, that's what we desire. We desire the connection we know is possible with each other. But we have to be honest about that.
Oh, so I also wanted to talk a little bit about in the book that you were talking about the agape, philia, and eros, those three aspects. So do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I really enjoyed reading about that.
Well, it's interesting because I would have couples work with me and they would always be wanting this great tantric experience. But for some reason, they just really were struggling to get there. And when I was writing the book, I was trying to figure out, you know, it's sort of interesting when you write a book, as you guys know, like it's that first introductory chapter that somehow is going to set the stage for the whole experience. Like it's the most pressure ever is that first chapter. And I just couldn't figure it out until one day I realized. So there's an online course that I've been teaching for about 10 years that people would take, couples, individuals, all about Tantra. And the first week, the question is, can you be kind to your partner for 1 week? Just kind. And the number of people who wrote in their homework, well, that's stupid. That'd be so boring. Why would I ever do that? And sometimes I'm tired and they piss me off. And yet they want to have this cosmic, energetic connection with each other. Yet they just kind of did this to them, but they don't want to necessarily have any consequences for that. And again, it's not a case of judicious consequences. It's just life. If you throw a rock in the river, the rock's in the river now. It's not going to magically come back. That's where it is. And so what I realized was, as a society, we lack kindness.
I have to show you because our podcast is called Couples Therapy in 7 Words. For people who are just listening to this, I'm holding up one of our mugs that has the 7 words: be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
Oh,
That's
that's
my capsule summary on, well, somebody once asked me, how do you do couples therapy? And I said, I suppose if you boil it all down, that's pretty much what I'm telling people. And that notion, yes, starting with kindness, that notion of finding essential kinship between people is basic. That's where you got into the idea of writing about agape, it sounds like.
well, well, it was funny because, like, at one point, I'd gone back to university to study psychology because everyone was coming to me for counseling, and my math degree really wasn't cutting it for, you know, counseling experience.
I have a
But,
master's in statistics myself, so just saying.
right? And, well, I mean, there is something about organizing the world and seeing the world, but that's a whole other discussion about mathematics and philosophy. But I remember studying, I took a course about love, and they were talking about the ancient Greek ideas of agape, philia, storgos, eros, all these things. But I remember just sitting there listening, going, but what does this have to do with anything? Like, it was like, okay, so you put a bunch of words together, but how is this helpful? Like, how does this help? And it wasn't until I was writing this book and I was lying in the tub, because that's where I get all my final realizations about writing. And I realized that these are depths of love. They aren't, oh, philia's over there and agape's over here and eros is over here. They all are depths of the same thing. That if I was to imagine, if you and I, so agape, for example, is the connection between all humans. I mean, it could be for dogs and animals and stuff, but just to be simple, let's leave it with humans. And so agape is God's love of man, or is how we see others through the eyes of the divine, right? So we're not looking at people through the eyes of our personality or of pain or anything. We're just seeing people from a much, from 50,000 feet, as my sister would say. And that is agape. That is where we recognize each other as souls on a path. We have no idea what each other's doing. We have no idea what ancestral trauma we're working through. We have no idea. But we fully see each other as friends in the sandbox. I don't know what's going on in your house. You don't know what's going on in my house, but let's just play together, right? That's agape. And so from there, this is kindness. Why would you not be kind to someone? You have no idea what they're going through and what they're struggling with. And from that comes a lack of judgment, right? That we don't understand. Even if I tried to simplify what I see in your life, that's all I've done is simplified it into something my little brain can understand. So from there, kindness also comes respect and a lack of judgment, that I just simply look at you. So this is the foundation. So like, you imagine if there was a river of energy flowing between us, if we have agape, there's a potential. Like, this is true human love. Like, this is my teacher Jim, he used to define love as connection. And so this is how humans connect. And so from there, so maybe I don't know that person, but I can have agape for them, right? But now let's say we meet someone and we become friends. Well, now all of a sudden that connection can become deeper. And that's where it can turn into philia, brotherly love, where we actually are confidants. I can actually share my heart with you. I can actually, we have each other's back. There's a deeper kind of connection, which we call love, but it's a deeper connection that, you know, kind of brothers in arms or whatever that is, that this is much deeper. There's a personal connection now. But again, it has to be founded in agape. You can't actually have philia if the other person is judging you or if the other person thinks you should be making better choices.
That's what you always say.
I said you can't have philia without having agape.
It's
That's true. I
true.
don't think it's
Yeah.
something you always say, but that is
Yeah.
true. Yes.
Not in
And
those words, so I like to have a little language for it. So,
it also just occurred to me, I happen to be working on a book about betrayal. The working title is Betrayal, Faith, and Forgiveness. And it just occurred to me in that distinction between agape and philia, the only way someone can betray you is if you have philia. Have that sense of closeness where you have expectations of trust that then they can violate or you can violate. But that doesn't happen with any random person. A random person could hurt you, but they can't betray you. It takes someone with whom you have at least philia, if not eros as well, to betray you.
Totally.
Brings us to our next
Brings
stage,
us,
the
yes,
Eros.
eros, yeah.
So then Eros is again a very special thing that we can't have with just anyone, as you can always know for anyone who's in the dating world. As much as you would like to have Eros with that person, it's either there or it's not. It's not a, you can't cultivate it. It's just there or not. Now, Eros in the context of having philia and agape, that's where magic is possible. Because in sexual intimacy, we are very vulnerable. We are very physically vulnerable, like in the land of pure protection, self-protection, right? We are energetically vulnerable because if we actually want to open our hearts completely, we do become quite telepathic, right? We do become very empathic as well. Like, we can feel the other person. So if there are things that you don't want this other person to know because you're afraid of judgment, which would mean there's a lack of agape. If you don't trust this person, there's a lack of philia. You can't actually experience erotic love. Like, you can't actually experience the depth of what that really is. You can have lust. Lust is just procreative animalistic sex, which is, you know, super fun and whatever. But you don't require agape or philia or anything. You just close your eyes, have a few drinks, and, you know, do what dogs do. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, it's just sex. But to actually have it within love, this is very, very different. And it was really interesting. So there was two analogies that I wanted to talk just to say, is that there's this river concept that I first was thinking about, that it's kind of like the river just gets deeper and deeper and wider, which of course allows more energy to flow between us, which makes the love feel deeper. But then I felt like there was something else. And my daughter has a friend who is an artist. And I asked her, I said, could you? So I gave her the chapter as it was, and I said, could you draw a picture that represents these loves? And this was the picture she drew of a tree, that agape was the root and philia was the trunk and the branches, and eros were the trees and the blossoms. And what was so interesting is, because in the end, it's always agape that kills the tree. If all of a sudden someone is unkind and
Yeah.
they cut that root, it doesn't kill the whole relationship, but it starts to weaken it. And then this one, and then this one, and then this one. That is what slowly erodes a relationship, which is why agape is so important. Like, even if you imagine times where maybe there's no eros, maybe there's grief and difficulty and loss, as long as there is agape, as long as you're still feeding the roots and there's kindness, eventually the seasons will turn. Right? But if you start cutting away at those roots, eventually the tree will die.
Well, there's a couple I met with this morning who that it's amazing thinking of these are folks I just met today, thinking of their story is a lot about that, that some stuff happened early on and they lost agape in the terms you're describing. And it's for a number of years they have not been kind to each other, even though you can tell they still love each other, they want it to work, but they haven't been kind for a very long time, and that makes it very hard.
And it's always interesting, especially when we talk about tantra, because people want to jump straight to the sexy stuff, right? And it's like, well, even like I'll have, especially being a female tantra teacher, right? I'll get emails from men saying, I'd like to have a tantric experience with you. Like in 1 hour, just like an hour. Like, I'll just get right there. And it's always, which I don't do, but it's like there's a, it's such a misconception that no, this is the vehicle of the experience. Like, we have to also, because of course, all of these loves apply to us as well. Like, we have to have agape for us. We have to quieten that judge within us that we hear outside. We have to be our own best friend. We have to have philia within. We
Yeah,
have to
I
have
think a
all
lot
of this within.
I'm sorry, I think a lot of people think that tantra, when they hear tantra, they think, tantric sex, and they think that it's a technique rather than a whole philosophy, a whole way of being, a whole way of looking at the world. And that when I was reading your book, it just, really expanded my understanding of it. So when you said, the guy came to me and he said, he wants to, he probably thinks it's a technique that you could teach him and he can go back and, use this on all his girls or whatever.
My magic touch will change you for life.
So how does Tantra affect a couple?
Well, it's interesting because people would come to me and they'd say, well, if I take this course, will it help our relationship? And I said, well, it'll either help it or end it.
Which is a way of helping it if it kind of
If
needs
it
to
needs to
end.
end, right.
One way or the other, it won't be the same, which is probably good.
Well, and for example, like, so, like, say, like in this course that I have, the first week they have to be kind to each other. Well, for some couples, that's the last week they do of the module. Because suddenly the elephant in the room has been called out. You can't be kind for 1 week. And this does, and kindness also, I realized there was a misunderstanding what kindness meant. Kindness didn't doesn't mean never getting angry, never being tired, never being upset. It kindness is how I treat another person. Right? I can be, I'll say to someone, honestly, I'm not really good company right now. I'm just chewing on stuff. It's not you. I just need some time to chew on stuff. Right? Or I am like so angry. I could scream. Like, I just, can I vent with you? Can I, but we can still be kind to this other person that we love, even if we're having a bad day.
They don't have to become the target of your anger.
Totally.
I think that's true, even if, if I do something annoying. You can be angry at me, but you are inevitably still kind to me, even if I'm annoyed. Which I think there's the expression of kindness. You know what I mean? I could certainly be annoying, and Judy is wonderfully kind to me, even when I'm annoying. And she'll tell me if I'm being annoying, but she's very kind about it. And that I think that's the key. That the we did a podcast a few months ago where I determined the key that unlocks all relationship problems. Nothing too grandiose about
No,
that.
no, no, no.
Is simply the ability to be mildly annoyed. That's it. But I think actually, I claimed at the time and still claim there's actually something. It's silly to say that it's the key that solved everything, but there's something to it in very much the context you're talking about, because What that is to say is that no, even if she's annoyed with me, you notice I never say that I'm annoyed with her because she's never annoying. I mean, just I'm annoying. So
That's why we get along.
that's why we get along. I know that. But no, that phenomenon that if somebody's annoyed and they don't, they can still be kind. And in that kindness, then you can handle. Of course, there can be annoyances. We are all annoyed and all annoying. That's the human condition on occasion. But kindness underneath that is how that it turns into almost funny or at least no big deal. And you can handle it gracefully and everybody's fine.
Well, I think honestly, your mug defines tantric relationship. Like that be kind, don't panic, and have faith, because this is exactly it. Like on a foundation, I know I love you and I want us to be kind. I want us to be connected. That is my primary thing. Some people, that isn't their primary thing. Sometimes people actually, I am so angry at the world. I'm so angry at my parents. I need someone to beat up. And that actually is their unconscious intention in the relationship. And that's important to note, right? That actually is what I need. Are you okay with being my punching bag? Some people are because maybe they need to be a punching bag, like whatever, like who knows why we stay together. But that be kind and then don't panic. Because that tantra, when we really personally take that path and we actually really understand that we are more than this personality, not above the personality, but we're more. We're kind of color that personality in with all the divine, with all the infinity of the world. Then suddenly, when someone's annoying or someone does something that isn't right or isn't kind or whatever, that we don't panic because we remember there's more going on here. And I love this person, so something must be going on, right? So I'm not going to panic. I'm not going to freak out. I'm not going to react. I'm not going to, And then to have faith. And faith is a huge deal because the thing about Tantra is Tantra is a spiritual path. It is not a secular sex group. I mean, there's lots of kind of the neo-tantric world that prefers it just to be about sex. And it's a neo-tantra is a very different sect. It's very much about sex magic and stuff like that. It's a very different thing. But in Tantra, it is a spiritual path. It is about merging the divine and the physical. It is reconnecting what was once pulled asunder, right? That's actually what it's about. And so then all of a sudden, here you are. You're kind. I'm not going to freak out. I'm not going to lash out, but I am going to close my eyes and ask for guidance right now. And from that place, I'm going to find different words. I'm going to have a different vision. I'm going to remember. And it's even interesting, like my partner and I. We've been together for 2 years now, and I've been divorced for 10. And I really loved being alone. It's ironic, as a well, maybe it's not because Tantra is not really about relationships, but I love my life. I really enjoy, I love my own company. I love the company of others. I have a beautiful community. My kids are all here, my family. Like, I really have a really rich life, but I really like being alone. I really enjoy that. And I enjoy, so my partner lived like an hour away. And I thought, well, this is great. Like we have this beautiful, lovely symbiotic relationship. And then about 3 months ago, I was doing a yoga practice and there was this meditation in the middle of it. And all of a sudden, I had a vision of us living together. And it was very lovely and it was very kind and fun and light. So I called him, I'm like, do you want to move in together? And he was like, really? And I'm like, yeah. But it's so interesting because I have so much faith in that vision that so he and I, of course, he's not fully in yet, but he spends like most of the time here now. And of course, all of our old marriage programs are coming up, all these things that wouldn't be touched if we stayed separate, right? But the faith in the vision that we are going to find this kind symbiotic thing together, no matter what comes up, and we're kind of just like, you don't panic, you stay kind, and you close your eyes. You're like, okay, hold on, what's going on here, really? Like, what? And then you resolve it every time.
Faith is the way I define faith operationally is just simply that you accept that reality is right to be what it is. Not merely accepting it sort of, I have to accept this awful stuff, but no, there's a rightness even when it's painful. There's something there you got to work with. And that's very similar, I think, to sort of closing your eyes and asking for guidance. It's like, no, there's something at the root of all this that is fundamentally good. And when you proceed from that mindset, then that's what lets you not panic, which in turn is what lets you be kind. Yeah. So now I guess we have to retitle our podcast Tantra in 7 words instead of, couples therapy in 7 words. So, Katrina, tell folks how people can find out more about you and get in touch with you if they want to take one of your courses or whatever.
Oh, I my website is katrinaboss.ca with one S, and all my books are on Amazon or anywhere online that you want to order books. And on my website, it has lots of online courses and live classes and do-it-yourself classes. And I teach also on Insight Timer, which is a wonderful free app that I've been teaching live ever since the lockdowns began. And it's really lovely, and it's full of meditations and things like that. And I teach there a couple times a week live. And yeah, but that's
Well,
my
wonderful.
website's the easiest thing to get on the newsletter there.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
Well, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Katrina. I certainly did, and I enjoyed reading her books. So I highly recommend them.
Yes, indeed. I'm just going to mention again, collecting stories of betrayal. So if you want to drop me a line, I would much appreciate hearing from you. I've been saying here at the end of the podcast, and I'll be specific about, send us a message. What I'm going to say today is send us a message and say something about if you've had an experience of betrayal. I think we'll narrow it to that.
Okay.
And I will be happy to send you a PDF of any of my books, just as a way of saying thank you. And so until next time,
Remember, be kind
don't panic.
and have faith.